Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Coming to you Monday night. It's been a little bit longer getting the show up than I expected. Man, been a busy stretch since we've been together. Recorded the Friday show Thursday night. I told you guys, don't get used to that. Okay? It takes a lot out of me, but the reality of it is we had some time last week. Going to be a much busier week this week. What's a busy weekend for me is I had to run the spa, as you guys know. A few of you even came down and floated, and certainly appreciate that. The bride went to Arkansas to meet the grandson and to celebrate our oldest, Vivi's, fifth birthday. Yeah, so super excited she got to go, but when you run a couple of businesses, somebody's got to be there. And so as a result, I kind of put things on hold. I want to praise my crew, Dave Murray, Rian Young, Jacob Bain, Neil Stubchinski, Dave Murray, Nate Purvis, everybody kind of stepping up and carrying the load for us. And the month of July is a difficult content time for us, especially once you get through the draft. There's not a lot of content, right? Opportunities. So you got to grind a little bit. That changes now. We have our first media availability on Tuesday, and it'll be packed. The one time that we will speak to assistant coaches all season will take place on Tuesday. And we'll have that content up for you right away. We'll filter it out throughout the week. It's a lot of content, and we're grateful for it. But, 3 days running the spa. It was fun. It's much busier than when I ran it last time. Much busier. And it gives me a profound amount of respect for my bride running that business. And it's very rewarding, too, because there's so many people, of course, that that get real benefit from it, whether it be, you know, just needing the break or perhaps having some chronic anxiety, some pain. And to see their faces when they come out, especially the newbies, and they look at you and they're just like, that was awesome. And it is awesome. I floated this morning, been a busy day. Floated this morning, didn't get a full float in because I had to hustle to Pontotoc and for a ink therapy appointment and kind of Ozzy related, something I've been planning for a little while. And just seemed like the right time to do it. And then got back, had to hustle and take care of some other stuff. And then our buddy Blair Chandler was in town. So I had dinner with Blair. Kind of a couple's night, and so here we are. Yeah, yeah, so busy day for sure. But yeah, you need to come float too. You can schedule online, you can get more information at truerest.com, or you can find us on social media at TrueRest Float Spa of Starville. You got questions, call Dana at 662-268-7601. She can answer your questions, and she's a registered nurse. You know, so if you got some medical issues you need to discuss, you can discuss those with her. She's a lot better equipped to handle that than me. But, it was nice seeing so many of you for the first time. And, you know, it's kind of like delivering flowers, I would imagine, right? When people come in and have a great experience, it's not like working in a retail furniture business, you know, where somebody comes in and spends $5,000 on a house full of furniture and they want to send it all back because there's a nick on the backside of a guest bedroom nightstand or something like that. Completely different dynamic. So I did enjoy it. I did miss all of you. I did miss my normal routine. I am a creature of habit, as many of you know, part of being an addict. But I mean, grateful that I have a great crew, that even when I am unavailable at times, that the show goes on over at jeanspage.com. And certainly, again, very, very appreciative of all of them. And I haven't been as present on the message boards the last few days. That changes tomorrow. And excited about that aspect of it, too. But mostly excited about, too, because, you know, college football season is very, very close. What is it, 35 days, something like that? We're within striking distance now. First media availability Tuesday, first practice Thursday. I don't know how much we'll get to observe. We'll share that with you on Friday. We'll get a chance to speak to Jeff Lebby on Thursday. So it's here. I mean, kids, we made it. We did. And what an eventful summer it's been. You know, we have, of course, had the coaching change. Figured we would close strong with or without Chris Lamonis. We did. We didn't get out of a regional, which sucks. It does, but so proud of our young men and the effort them and the coaches put forth to ensure that they got to the postseason, but also too that they went out there and played hard. But at Mississippi State, we are a results-oriented organization. Expectations here, but very proud of Justin Parker and everybody involved that did their best. Also want to wish the best to the Starkville Little League team that'll begin play out in Waco, Texas against Louisiana. Wish them the best. Excited for them. Still some baseball being played of a Starkville variety. But excited. And of course, obviously, all the excitement around Brian O'Connor. I mean, it feels like, we're coming up on 2 months, right? I mean, we're not quite there yet. We're almost 2 months into this thing. And, Brian O'Connor's first official day was the first day the portal opened. He was here that Sunday night and then went right to work on portal activities. And not quite done there. And as mentioned earlier on Gene's page, too, the designated student athlete label, it's a new thing. Teams had until July 6th to classify guys as DSAs. And many of those guys are going to be walk-ons. There's not a lot of uniformity with all that, though. Some teams are like putting all their freshmen, which is kind of risky, because by making them DSAs, you give them the ability to transfer now. Like, they can pick the opportunity to go in the portal up until August the 5th and transfer in time for fall ball somewhere else, because school doesn't start at state until August 20th. We haven't had anybody go in yet. We don't expect it, but you never know. And then at the end of fall ball, after all the practices and all the exit interviews, if you're a DSA, you can go back in the portal and transfer to a new school and be eligible to play this spring. Now, you're not going to put DSA labels on guys like Ace Reese or, Thomas Valinkas, people like that. I mean, it's going to be guys that maybe you don't expect to play a lot this year. And so it gives them the opportunity, rather than having to go to junior college in January, should they have the opportunity to go elsewhere if there's a roster spot available, and this year they're going to be more than normal because of the cap being somewhat of a soft cap this year. Going to be a much harder 34-man cap next year unless legislation changes, and that changes like the wind, it seems. But it's important to understand there is still, some ebb and flow with all of this. But here in about a week, all that's over. And if you want to add one or two more players from the portal, and as I illustrated last week at Gene's page, and there's a lot of people out there that jump out there and they get, quote, breaking news, but they don't preface it with all of the parameters around that. If you're a DSA, you can't transfer within the league if you were an existing player, like this Menendez thing from Florida. All right, he's already played 2 years at Florida. So in order for him to transfer to Mississippi State, he'd have to get a waiver from the league. And what necessitates that waiver is a true hardship, like a family illness, scholarship situation, something like that. Like if you're a walk-on or whatever and you can't figure out your financial aid, you have the opportunity. But those are really kind of the only parameters for an in-conference transfer this late in the process. And so more times than not, what you're going to do is rather than have to deal with all the bureaucracy of getting a waiver, you'll just go get a player of comparable ability somewhere else that doesn't have to go through this waiver process. Important to understand. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. I love Bulldog Burger Company, and I have for a long time. Again, one of their first customers. And I remember walking out there that day and thinking, these folks are going to make it. And that kind of stands to reason. They're part of the Eat With Us group. They know how to feed folks. They fed us for so many years. They've hosted your rehearsal dinners. They've hosted your graduation celebrations. There's a lot of things that go along with that group. They're just become part of our family in that respect. We have celebrated so many great occasions at the Eat With Us restaurants. Matter of fact, Blair and I took our significant others to Harvey's tonight. But Bulldog Burger Company, so many times I have gone in there just, needing to get some protein, needing to get something fresh, needing to get a nourishing meal, because I don't just eat for survival, I eat for enjoyment, and I enjoy eating at Bulldog Burger Company. I suspect you do too. I know if you ask your kids, like, hey, where you guys want to go, Bulldog Burger Company is going to be the first thing they say. Get the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. Get that chocolate chip. You can ride that ride home with a smile. Three great locations to serve you: University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Find your own favorites. If you're a newbie, let's start with the Bulldog Burger. You can't go wrong there, right? And then maybe branch out in your subsequent visits. But, you know, if you want to gamble a little bit and get on the wild side, maybe get that smokehouse, maybe get the Pimentology, add bacon. That'll put some hair on your chest. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right. I had a request about the Mississippi State football schedule, because we're getting there, right? We're getting there now to start kind of thinking this thing, because everybody's like, Steve, I'm trying to find a way to get to six. The first thing that I'll tell you about that, I agree, but man, I hate those years. Don't you? Like, I love the years when we know that a bowl game is pretty much expected. Not hoped for, but expected. Like, yeah, we're going to get at least six. We're going to be playing either, you know, the month of November to find out if we're in a Tennessee bowl game or a Florida bowl game. You know, those are good years. These years, the expectations, a bit more meager. And everybody that I speak to, I spoke to Jason today, the superintendent of this, you know, Columbia High School District and all that good stuff, spoke to him today. And he's like, hey, Steve, are we going to be able to get to six? And it reminded me of a message that I got over the weekend. He's like, Steve, give me the pathway to six. And so I'm going to do my best today to kind of share what I think is probable and possible, but also, too, to kind of give you some insight about some of these series. So we'll start with Southern Miss. As you guys know, we're no longer claiming those forfeits. And that has not filtered out to all of the media in that respect. You know, the two games that we forfeited, part of the Larry Gillard case, I shared that information with you recently. And what's interesting, too, those two games, Southern Miss scored a combined 9 points. And then were awarded forfeits. And it was all very, very, very capricious. But, yeah, Mississippi State has played Southern Miss 31 times. On the field, we've won 20. But there was a stretch there where things were very difficult. You know, Southern Miss won 7 in a row. Should we win this one this year, it would give us a 7-game winning streak against Southern Miss, dating back to 1988. Last time Southern Miss beat us, that was the Tech and 10 season. They won 38-21. It was a bit of a game, you know, maybe for a half. You know, we kind of tried to stay in it, but, you know, defensively, they were pretty good that year. We weren't. Thus, the Tech and 10. Many of you have kind of erased that season from your memory, and I get it. You know, I don't know who dubbed it Tech and 10, but it stuck. But since the Tech and 10 season, Mississippi State has won 6 straight. We win in 89. That game was in Hattiesburg, of course. That's the, you know, the week after Southern Miss had beaten Florida State. And as State made some big plays in that ball game, State fans kind of sarcastically did the Florida State chop. Beat Brett Favre then, and then the rematch in 90 right here in Starkville. I was in at both games. We win that game 13-10. One of the big moments, too, for Eddie Miles. Big interception in that game to kind of, you know, secure things. And then we didn't play again for nearly 25 years. State welcomed Southern Miss back to Davis-Wade Stadium in 2014. And again, we had been pretty much annual opponents for the better part of 20 years. And we beat Southern Miss 49-0. And there were a lot of Southern Miss fans that were really jacked about that game. You know, because for years, that was their motto, anybody, anywhere, anytime, except Starkville. Like, they didn't want to come to Starkville. So we finally work it out. And they come here, and we get them, and it was not a close ball game. The rematch the next year, we went down to Hattiesburg, and you remember it was such a funky game. Like, we didn't want Dak to run early on, and of course, we had the big fumble early in the game. thought we were going to just go right down the field, and Ashton Shumpert fumbled going across the goal line, and then, you know, Southern Miss run a fake punt or something. We ended up winning that game 34-16, but it was not a very impressive game. Brian Haydad made the trip down there with me, rode with me. If we're driving back, somebody was going southbound in the northbound lane at 59, and I hope that they survived, but it was pretty freaky. Pretty freaky. Really weird, especially that time of night, because you remember that game started at like 9. It was ridiculous. But we won. We got out of there. Post-game was basically outside the Mississippi State locker room, and there were some Southern Miss fans who were a little bit salty, kind of interfered. Bulldogs hosted Southern Miss in 2019, win that game 38-15. The game in Hattiesburg was 34-16, and in 38-15, back in 19, I think Greg Knox led us to a victory. You know, remember the four-wheeler, you know, riding heavy? We win that game 41-20, but it was a real game for three quarters. State with some separation late. And if you recall, too, that's after we got an absolutely destroyed at Texas A&M. And Zach Arnett was relieved of his duties on Monday. Greg Knox installed as the interim coach, trying to get us to a bowl game. And guys really responded to Greg. And we got the win. And you know as well as I do, had we not fired Arnett, there would have been nobody, in attendance for that Southern Miss game, except for a few Southern Miss fans, the few that there are. Absolutely would not have been much. But that's the series. And again, State's won on the field 20 times. But again, a great stretch there for Southern Miss. Probably one of the glory years and glory eras of the Southern Miss football program. And when I was a kid, you know, Bobby Collins was there before he went to SMU and gave them the death penalty. There used to be a bumper sticker that said probation, a Southern tradition. Arizona State, as you guys know, we played them last year. You know, we have only won, since we've had the Power Five mandate, we've only swept it one time. Did you know that? It was against Arizona. We've split them, and at times we've been swept in these Power Five mandates, but the only time we've won both was against Arizona. And, of course, one of those, Mike Leach is our coach, the one here in Starkville. Of course, you remember how that one ended on a review, and the quarterback from Arizona did not reach the line to gain, and so we celebrated after a review. And then last year, of course, we go to Arizona State. You guys are well aware of how that whole thing went, and the game was over at the break. We kind of made it look a little bit better in the second half. So we'll look to get even with Arizona State this year. I do like the fact that Dillingham meets with the media pretty much every day after practice. It's a lot of content opportunities, but also, too, I think it gives us some real insight into the health of our opponents. True. Week number three, we're going to host Alcorn for just the third time in school history. You know, we've played Jackson State a few times. Began to play Alcorn. We've never played Valley, but we played Alcorn for the first time back in 2010. That's year two of the Dan Mullen era. State wins that game 49-16. The Braves come back to Starkville in 2013, and that was a 51-7 game. And so, you know, we expect a similar deal this year. But it's probably the only game of the non-conference you look at and say, you know what, hey, they should win this one going away. I think every other game we're going to have to bring a better effort. I don't think there's any question about it. Northern Illinois, we talked about them. We did our preview of them. This is the inaugural meeting between the Bulldogs and the Huskies on the football field. And you forget, you know, last year they went to South Bend and they beat the Irish. And the Irish obviously had a big year last year. And so we need to get a dub there. But that's a team, that was a bowl team last year. You know, so when you begin to think about that aspect of it, listen, Southern Miss, you know, they're already chirping, right? They're going to treat this game like their Super Bowl. They're expecting it. It's so interesting. People are like, oh, Steve, they're so much better this year. Well, how do you know? How do you know? None of us know. You go to spring practice, you're practicing against yourself. You don't know. You know, they probably look a little bit better in a uniform. And obviously, you got those, you know, Marshall players coming in that are expected to certainly compete for starting positions. I just worry, if I'm Southern Miss, I'm worried a little bit about depth, you know. And not to mention, Yeah, even though Marshall was a championship team in the Sun Belt last year, it's still the Sun Belt. Okay, all due respect, it's a better baseball conference than it is a football conference. But a lot of those guys at Marshall were, you know, kind of cast off some other programs, and I mean that in the best way possible. I'm not sitting here trying to say they're a bunch of mercenaries. But Huff did a good job kind of putting that thing together. And I still think it's so incredibly stupid that Marshall let his contract expire. But, yeah, I expect to win that game. State's still favored for about 2 touchdowns. I think that's probably about right. And then the Arizona State game, again, I still believe that's the most difficult game, most important game on the schedule. Alcorn probably the only one you can look at and kind of breathe easy about. And then Northern Illinois. And so you look at that, 4 non-conference games all to start the season, all of them winnable, but only one of them appears to be certain. Now, Tennessee, we played them a lot over the years, and I had some people tell me that this Tennessee team is expected to take a pretty big step back. You know, like I really thought last year they maxed it out. You know, the quarterback situation with Aguilar is you know, pretty much up in the air. But it's so interesting. You know, Tennessee and Mississippi State have played 47 times. Tennessee has won 30 of them. So they haven't been quite as frequent as some other SEC teams because they were in the East. You know, we had that weird rotation. But, guys, when you begin to kind of look back here, let's just start with 1994. State wins that game 24-21, and it was huge. You know, huge. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Absolutely huge. We beat Peyton Manning. It was great. That's the last win we had until 2012. And kind of running those back for you, 95 we got drilled, 52-14. In 98 we played Tennessee in the SEC championship game. I don't know how many times that video passes my timeline when Kevin Prentice returns that punt in the fourth quarter to put us up 14-10. And you feel like, you know, lightning has struck, said Keith Jackson. Halfway through the fourth, we just couldn't make plays down the stretch. Moment got a little big for us. We didn't play again in 92. They get us 35-17. They absolutely destroy us. And I remember this last year of Jackie Sherrill. I remember thinking, you know, Fulmer probably wouldn't run it up. Well, he did, 59-21. 2007 against Sylvester Croom, 33-21. 2008, the final year of the Croom era, Tennessee gets us 34-3. Really a non-competitive game. 2012. Big game, right? Big game. And what you remember, if you're like me, is Tyler Russell hitting that touchdown pass late to win the game, essentially. We win at 41-31, and I remember leading into this game, like we had believed in Dan Mullen. Obviously, we're a couple years into this experience. You know, Dan gets here in 2009, 2010. He surprised so many people. And 11 and 12 were kind of up and down a little bit. But we felt like when we beat Tennessee, it's like, you know, we're maturing as a program. Dan Mullen is a coach that is capable of beating anybody. You give him equal or comparable talent, he's going to scheme your way into the fourth quarter. In 2019, in many respects, kind of the end of the Joe Moorhead era, right? I think most people would agree. I remember walking off the field that day. That Tennessee team had no life whatsoever. None. None. And we just couldn't get out of our own way. I mean, if Garrett Schrader starts that game, you probably win. Tommy Stevens just absolutely, like, crapped the bed in that ball game. There were some, we had very promising drives ended in turnover because we couldn't get it done. And so that got Tennessee going. They get hot from there and kind of close it out. But they win that game 20-10, and there was really no reason for that. And I remember Joe walking off the field that day. And I got some pictures of Joe walking off. And I told David Murray, I said, Dave, when we fire him, that's the picture you use. Because if it really ends here. This is where it ended. This is the beginning of the end. So when you get ready to write the Joe Moorhead termination story, remember this image. The dejected Joe Moorhead walking off the field at Neyland in a game we had no business losing. Wasn't a good Tennessee team. They got better under Jeremy Pruitt, but that day, I mean, if we win that game, who knows what happens to Tennessee. And then, of course, last year we lose 33-14. But I've got some people that tell me that game may prove to be a little more competitive than people realize. We're going to do one more, and then we'll take a break, get to our top 10 list, and we'll come back after the top 10 list and get through the rest of the schedule. Texas A&M. I don't know if I should be scared of Texas A&M or not. I don't know how you guys feel. I know they're an 8-4 team again. I mean, that's you know, kind of how it works, right? But State and A&M are 9-9 in the series, 9-9. And, of course, you know, the last couple of years, we've allowed them to even the series. You know, State was – thanks to Nick Fitzgerald, State had the advantage here. But you got to go back all the way to 1912, very first time we played. And that's the Duty Noble era, 1913, 1915. And here's something about that 1915 game you may not know. Duty Noble's last game, played in Dallas, Texas. We win the game 7-0. The Texas A&M Aggie Cadets carry Duty Noble off the field on their shoulders because they were so impressed with him. How about that? Yeah, so State wins that game 7-0. And then we don't play again in 1937. And, of course, in the Independence Bowl, the Snow Bowl in 2000, you win that game. One of the most exciting games in Mississippi State history. And then they become a conference opponent in 2012. Manziel gets the first couple against us. And then Dak gets them in 14. What a great day that was. Remember Kenny Trill after week one against South Carolina? People said, this guy's going to win the Heisman, and you don't even know who Kenny Trill is anymore, right? The Aggies get us in 15. That was a tough one. It really was. In 16, we get the – like Nick just goes to work, right? 16, their FBS playoff team number four, Nick gets them. The game – the final score is 35-28. And you remember that clip they didn't call on that punt for Kirk right before the half? Yeah. 17, we get him down in College Station. Kellen Mond absolutely melts. 2018, State gets him again. Errol Thompson with a big interception there in the end zone to basically close it out. And then Nick takes it to the house, kind of removes all doubt. It was a great night, for sure. 2019, we go down there. Drew Moorhead told me, after it was all over, that was the one game that surprised him the most. He was really disappointed with our effort. He said, we had a great week of practice, thought we had a good game plan, and then we get absolutely buzz cut, 49-30. 2020, they come up here. Emmanuel Forbes had the pick six to kind of keep us in that ball game, kind of emerging as a star at that point. We lose that game 28-14, but you may recall, you know, it was a one-score game late. We just couldn't get off the field. 2021, Will Rogers and the crew goes down there and wins that game. Pretty impressive. It was one of those games, too. Like, we just needed a couple drives to kind of prove that we were there to win. We weren't just there to keep it close. The big safety late. And how fun was it to watch Will Rogers take a knee at Kyle Field. 2022, they come here. And you know, Emmanuel Forbes, a thorn in the Aggie side with the blocked field goal. How great that it ended up being, right? State wins that game 42-24. Jimbo was upset. Post game typically was. In 23, we go down there, that debacle. And again, it's just inexcusable. I personally informed the staff that Max Johnson wasn't going to play. Personally. So they're going to play the transfer. They're going to play the young kid. And Jed Johnson tells us in post game, we didn't even know that guy was going to play. We were preparing for Max Johnson. It's inexcusable. Fireable offense. 51-10 is your final. And then, of course, last year, again, competitive game, we lose 24-34. And again, I think you go back and look at that game, and because the season went, you know, so poorly from a win-loss standpoint, you almost forget we had every opportunity to win that game against Texas A&M, just couldn't get it done. All right, let's go ahead and name our close with Blair player of the day. A lot of directions we can go at this time of year, but we're going to give it to Coach Jeff Levy. We're going to be optimistic that this defensive unit has been shorn up by work in the portal and by some offseason additions of Paul Rhodes and Mike McIntyre. And I think if you're going to run it back with Coleman Hutzler, You got to make sure you bring some people around him to help him be successful. I believe we've done that. Close the Blair is your one-stop shop for all your mortgage needs. Many of you don't even realize you have mortgage needs. If you are on the hamster wheel of renting, you need to get off and put some boots in the ground, get some roots, get some generational wealth. We talk about that. That's a buzzword these days. You know, real estate and buying a home and having a home, being able to bequeath that home to your descendants is a step in that direction. You can call Blair at 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. Visit his website, closewithblair.com, C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Get that pre-qualification letter from Blair. It'll make things so much easier. You don't need to be shopping above your means. And so you get this pre-qualification letter, and you know exactly what price range you can be shopping. You know what you're approved for. You know what your payment's going to be. You know what you can afford. And you've already got financing lined up. Like underwriting's already said, okay, we're willing to approve this person up to this. And that's the know-how and expertise of Blair Chandler kind of giving you the keys to the kingdom. 24 years of experience, get his expertise and know-how working for you. And again, 601-500-2344. All right, time for today's top 10 list is always brought to you by Kalido Guitars. That's C-A-L-I-D-O guitars.com. That's your guitar shop, okay? Many of you don't have like a favorite guitar shop. You don't have a place that you can always count on to be reliable, to deliver all the accessories you need to get you playing at a high level. What's Kalido? C-A-L-I-D-O guitars.com. Expertise, great selection, incredible, impeccable service before and after the sale. A lot of times you go buy something online, something goes wrong, you don't know who to contact. There's no number to call. You do this AI assistant whatever, and you still can't get anybody on the phone to explain your very unique situation. You know, you get personal service at Kalido Guitars. You can order online if you prefer. You can stop by their showroom in Lake Jackson, Texas, or you can call over the phone. And we got a promo code to help you do that, to save you some money and also help Mississippi State at the same time. Yeah, so whether you're looking for a new guitar, guitar cases, gig bags, accessories, strings, guitar stands, anything you need guitar-related, you can find at Kalido Guitars. I like to keep business in the family. I hope you do too. These are some folks you should throw some business their way, even if it's something small. Right? Just to support another bulldog that is supporting Mississippi State. Your promo code is BSR. You know what it means. It's very standard for the show. When you tell them, hey, BSR sent me, that's going to get you a 10% discount. You're getting the Kenfolks discount, 10% off. You're getting no sales tax unless you live in the state of Texas. You're getting free shipping. How cool is that? Already you saved a bunch of money. It's already been worth your time and effort. But then they're going to make a 5% donation to the Bulldog Excellence Fund to help Mississippi State put a better quality product on the field and courts of play. How about that? Kalido Guitars. Be sure and check them out today. That's your guitar shop, Kalido Guitars. All right, working through our Ozzy Osbourne stuff. I told you I had a tattoo today. I already had the bat. I added the nice haunting kind of harvest moon with some more bats behind it. We'll do some more stuff. It's very Ozzy themed. But let me tell you this, the stomach is no joke. A lot of people can get a tattoo on their shoulder blade or perhaps on their bicep. The stomach is no joke. Now, I tolerate it because I'm tough, but it's no picnic, okay? In the words of Cosmo Kramer, it's no picnic. But yeah, I'm a huge Ozzy guy, and I have said on this show many times, and some people want to argue with me, and that's fine. That's what it's all subjective, right? But the Jakey Lee years were the peak Ozzy years. Now, there were some great years with Zakk Wylde, don't get me wrong, and I think some of that is because so many of Ozzy's contemporaries kind of fell from favor, right? Ozzy was like a true disciple to hard rock, and he continued the journey, right? But the Jake years, you know, there was so much that happened, you know, after Randy died. And everybody's like, well, you know, what are they going to do? Well, you know, they went out and they got Bernie Torme. And it quickly found out it just wasn't the right fit, you know. I mean, and Torme is a guy too that, you know, worked with all these legends. You know, he'd worked some with Hendrix and Jeff Beck. But yeah, he was legit. He was. And I did a little bit of time with Ozzy, didn't last. And then they bring in Brad Gillis. Now, Brad Gillis, if you've listened to the Ozzy album Speak of the Devil, that's Brad on guitar. That's from the Diary of a Madman tour. And a lot of that, too, was to kind of keep Ozzy relevant while they kind of figured all this stuff out, you know. So, again, you listen to Speak of the Devil, that's not Randy. That's Brad playing Randy's licks. The name Brad Gillis, of course, a little more famous because Night Ranger. Yeah. Night Ranger is where he kind of, you know, had his claim to fame and had actually done some work with them. Joined Ozzy temporarily, and Ozzy was so bitter about everything that happened with Randy. He didn't treat Brad well, and, you know, you didn't play this right, and it didn't work out. Wasn't a good fit. So he goes back to Night Ranger and really helped Night Ranger kind of find their groove. And our buddy Roy Simonte is a big Night Ranger guy. But that's where, you know, Brad Gillis from. Then they found Jake, right? And so you had two guitarists between Randy and Jake, but no studio albums. Then we get ready to enter into a new era, Bark at the Moon. And I submit to you that most casual fans of the genre, they think Randy Rhoads played Bark at the Moon. Did not. Jake E. Lee actually wrote that song when he was with Rough Cut and brought it with him and then kind of changed the arrangement a little bit to kind of match the Ozzy style. It became a hit. Not properly credited on the album, but it was Jake E. Lee's song, right? So Jake played on two studio albums and then got fired, spent some time finding himself in a bottle, and then formed Badlands, which is a great band. If you can find those CDs out there, you owe it to yourself. The self-titled and the Voodoo Highway albums out of print, which is unfortunate. There's some legal issues with all of that. You can find Dusk out there. You can even download Dusk. It's the weakest of the three. It's good. It's not nearly as good. Voodoo Highway, I think, is the best, but I love the self-titled album. But Jake, phenomenal player, returned a few years ago with Jake E. Lee's Red Dragon Cartel. It's good. I don't think it's nearly as good as the work he did with Ozzy. So let's break it down. Top 10 Ozzy Osbourne songs from the Jake E. Lee era as determined by your good friend and host. We're going to start number 10. I love the opening on this. And I've heard it so many times, right? And every time I hear it, I think, you know what? It's pretty cool. It's Fool Like You off the Ultimate Sin album. Love it, man. I think Ultimate Sin's one of the better Ozzy albums. People want to fight you over that, and that's okay. And let me just go ahead and say this for the record. Randy was technically a better guitarist, okay? Much more proficient, had the classical training. Completely different guitarist than Jake. Jake was a better heavy metal guitarist. Never going to win a competition with Randy when it comes to technical proficiency. But as far as like fitting in and helping kind of revitalize the Ozzy Osbourne band, Jake got it done. Number 9, going back to Bark at the Moon, it's You're No Different. You're No Different Than Me, right? And I think the longer we've known Ozzy, the more we felt that. He just had a cooler job. Number 8, one of my favorite tracks, and I don't know that I've got the vocal delivery to cover this, but I love this song, and I can't help but sing along every time it shows up. It's Lightning Strikes from The Ultimate Sin. It's a fun, upbeat song. And we talk about Ozzy being a serious musician. This is about as lighthearted as it gets with Ozzy. It's a rock song, though. Straight ahead. Number 7, Back to Bark at the Moon. And I love this. So my buddy Tim Stringer, I think for a while outside of Bark, this is his favorite song on that album. It's Now You See It, Now You Don't. And I like the harmonies on this. And Ozzy is so good at kind of constructing those melodies. I think that stands out here. Number 6, and I like this song a lot, even though it's number 6. It's not my favorite song on Ultimate Sin, obviously, or it would be higher on our list. I love the song, and it's interesting. You know, In My Grief, of Ozzy Osbourne's passing, you remember Julie? The incredibly good-looking protagonist in the Shot in the Dark video. And she's on the cover. And she's this siren, right? Well, she was like 5'2". And she ended up being an actress and a model. And she lives like in New Hampshire now or somewhere in New England. And she just looks like somebody's grandma. And that happens, right? No disrespect to grandmothers, but she doesn't look anything like you would expect her to look. And that's not just being critical. It just kind of goes to show you that life happens to all of us. But Shot in the Dark, number 6. Number 5, one of my favorites in the entire catalog. And you say, Steve, why is it so low on your list? Well, it's because these albums are packed. I love the opening riff on this. I think Jake does a tremendous job on this. It's Rock and Roll Rebel. Yeah, love it, love it, love it. Number 4, and it's in my Twitter bio, and I hope it's played at my funeral. Jake E. Lee said of all the songs that he recorded with Ozzy Osbourne, this is the one he was most proud of. It's Killer of Giants. And it's a very thought-provoking song in many respects. Like, if none of us believe in war, then you know, what are all the weapons for? You know, right? There's a lot to it. There's a much thicker Ozzy Osbourne than you realize. There's a lot more depth to Ozzy than just the partying and stuff, you know. Number 3, a deep track, and I think this may surprise some people, those of you that are big Ozzy fans, but when I give you my explanation here, I think you'll be about this. This list is about Jake, okay? The Ozzy songs of the Jake E. Lee years. I think Jake absolutely kills it on Center of Eternity. Now, it's got a very Black Sabbath vibe, even has the bell in the beginning and all this airy stuff in the background, like a lot of the stuff that's happening now. You know, all this stuff, all this background stuff, everybody has to have backing tracks in their iPads or they can't do a show. A lot of that was born out of the Ozzy Osbourne Black Sabbath era. And I think Center of Eternity is really a throwback to the Black Sabbath era. Not just the additional audio, but I think the riffing itself. There's just a vibe on Center of Eternity. And I think Jake really captures that. I think it really shows that Jake was the right pick to be the full-time guitarist in Ozzy, because I think he was, number one, a Black Sabbath fan, and I think he proved here that he had the chops to kind of pull off what Ozzy was truly about. Number 2, it's a title track off the final Jake E. Lee album with Ozzy, and it's The Ultimate Sin. It was performed live at the Back to the Beginning show, and Jake stepped out there and played that, and Lizzie Hale, our friend, sang vocals on this, and I didn't know this. I learned this when Ozzy passed. You know, Lizzie's name professionally is LZZY, and that is a tribute to Ozzy Osbourne. Did you know that? Isn't that crazy? Yeah, her name is Lizzie, but she shortened it professionally as a shout out to Ozzy, and she goes and plays this great song. The drummer from Faith No More is on board here. And I think the bass player from Mastodon, of course, Nuno Bettencourt from Extreme. And I've really enjoyed seeing all the reels with Nuno and how much he enjoyed being there at the show. What a joy it was for him. And one of the most proficient guitarists of my lifetime. But number one, what else could it be? It's Bark at the Moon. And if you go back and you listen to this, it really holds up. Right, a lot of people know Ozzy from Crazy Train and Far From a One-Hit Wonder, but Bark at the Moon, the lead single off the Bark at the Moon album, of course, the first recordings with Jake E. Lee on guitar, and what a great introduction to Jake E. Lee. And people forget Jake E. Lee was part of Rat. Did you know that? Matter of fact, you go back, for those of you that know the Rat catalog, you know the original EP. You know, Tawny Catane was on Out of the Cellar. She was also on the EP. That was her leg. And you remember the great Rat track, Tell the World? That dates back to the Mickey Rat days when Jake E. Lee was part of the band. And it was part of, like, this compilation CD that came out in 82, kind of introducing these new acts. Metallica was on that album. How about that? But Tell the World dates back to the Jake E. Lee. And just so you know, Jake E. Lee's name is Jakey. J-A-K-E-Y. Jakey. Yeah. How about you? Maybe you didn't know that. Yeah. His mom from Japanese heritage. His dad was an American. You know, he was born out in Norfolk, Virginia. He was a military brat and then spent most of his formative years in San Diego and ultimately became an incredible guitarist and was part of the house band at a all-ages club in San Diego. Next thing you know, he's headed to L.A., gets together with a couple of bands. Of course, you know, Mickey Ratt, Rough Cutt, and eventually with Ozzy. Did some work, too, with Carmen Appice and Ronnie James Dio. Carmen says that there's audio recordings of those demos with Jake. I wish they would release all that stuff. But nevertheless, I'm a huge Jake Ely fan. I always have been. And I was very upset, you know, with the news of Randy Rhoads. And that, you know, we're young when all this stuff happens. Like, this stuff just didn't happen. You know, Lynyrd Skynyrd happened when we were so young. And then this stuff happens with Randy Rhoads. It made you think, maybe I don't want to get an airplane, you know. But when Jake took the stage and you saw all that hair and you saw the showmanship, you're like, you know what, this is all going to be okay. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy Samanti on X at Dawgmatic67. That's DawgMatic67. And you can find our great list on Spotify under that same handle. Of course, I'm on all forms of social media at ScoutSteveR. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. We love Campus Bookmart, and why? Because they have so many of the things we want. We want more Mississippi State merch, whether it be apparel, gift ideas, everything you need to detail out your fan cave, you can find it at Campus Bookmart. I encourage you next time you're in town, go by and see their smiling faces and their wide assortment of Mississippi State wares. They've served you so many years. And there's a reason you keep going back. It's the level of service. It's the quality of selection. It's the quality of merchandising. If you can't make it to town and you'd like to support a Starkville business, which we always encourage, visit them online at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays, and that is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75, any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. Campusbookmart.net. Okay, a couple things before we get to the resumption of the schedule. You know, I thought about this as I took a break there. It seemed like every day I turn around, there's just something else crazy happening in the world. You know, people, you know, going into crowded places with weapons and things of that nature, and you know, here's the thing that I'll say about number that. Yeah, number one, yeah, there is a mental health issue in this country. And I think it's more prevalent than people understand. But I think there's also a lack of accountability in this country. And not just from a political standpoint, not just from your local, state, and federal government. You know, there is a personal accountability thing. I am big on accountability. I believe in accountability. And I believe that starts at home. And, of course, we've got a lot of people out there as adults that have never been held accountable that are having and birthing children that have a lack of accountability as well. But at the end of the day, we're all responsible for ourselves, right? I read so much of this stuff online, and as I've shared with you guys before, the comment section half the time isn't worth reading. I mean, it's just really not. Sometimes some people say some funny things, but more times than not, people say some very inappropriate things. But let me just share my feelings on this. Like the guy went into Walmart and stabbed all those people. You know, the guy showed up in New York and just walked in, you know, with a assault rifle and shot people. That's not a gun problem. And I'm not saying we don't have the need for maybe some stricter gun control laws. I think that most people would agree, right? There's some of that that needs to be curtailed a little bit. I'm not saying we should give our guns up. I absolutely don't agree with that. But like the situation at Walmart, he didn't have a gun. He inflicted a lot of damage with a knife. And so the issue is, it's not the gun. It's not the knife. It's not the weapon of choice. It's the person. And I think one of the things that I see more times than not is a lot of people excusing this behavior. And I think at the end of the day, no matter who you voted for, and I don't care. I absolutely do not care who you voted for. I've got some friends of mine that never vote the way that I do, and they're still my friends. I loved it years ago when we didn't talk about who we voted for and we just kind of all pulled for America. all this tribalistic nonsense that goes on in political social media commentary and things like that, I don't think is very healthy. That's just my opinion. Because most people are not open to the dialogue. They just want to be on the attack. And every time that somebody does something incredibly harmful, it turns, people want to know who they voted for. I bet he voted for this party, or I bet he voted for that, or I bet he was a registered Democrat or a registered Republican. You know, none of that matters. None of it matters. It doesn't explain it away. It certainly doesn't help the victims. They're like, oh, well, yeah, I got stabbed. I'm going to be maimed for life. Oh, but he voted for the same people I did, so it's okay. It's ridiculous, man. It is. And then you read about these home invasions and, you know, these people that are, you know, going up and robbing people at banks and things like that. It's just gotten worse, you know. You know, like the good book tells us, I mean, the love of money is the root of all evil, right? There's so much of that. But here's the thing that I know, and I grew up in the South where, you know, a lot of people, we don't call the law, right? Right? We don't. And I had that discussion with somebody recently, some time ago. I won't get into all the details, but I had somebody recently that needed to be put on the Understand program. And I explained to them, listen, I'm not going to call the law. You and I will work this out directly. Now, you may call the law, but I'm not going to call the law. We're going to work this thing out. And at the end of the day, if somebody hurts or harms somebody that I love or somebody in my community, somebody that I depend on, somebody that I know, I don't care about their political affiliations. I don't care about their DNA composition. I don't care about their background. I don't care about their level of education. I don't care what size shoe they wear. I don't care who their favorite Smurf is. None of that matters to me. But you attack somebody connected to me, you should hope that somebody calls the law. You should hope that that's the case, because that is going to be the safest passage for you. And I know some people within, you know, my neck of the woods, and I know many of you feel the same way that I do. I'm not going to interview someone to find out their qualifications before I defend my family, my friends, my community. I'm not going to do it, because those things are just simply not important. And there's so many of these things that I've seen and learned, and we talk about, you know, kind of people being soft, right? There we talk about, you know, the fight or flight. You know, there's so much of that too that is conditional and on upbringing and things of that nature. But the reality of it is that I know in certain pockets of the country, especially here in the South, if you go and act up like that and you act indiscriminately and you don't show a respect for human life, there will be people that'll put you down for king and for country. Absolutely no question about it. And so many people put themselves in harm's way. This is not a video game. You show up and you break into somebody's house, you're taking your life into your hands. Period. And it happens all the time. And at the end of the day, and God forbid you ever be faced with a situation like that where you have to defend yourself, you know, against an assailant, you're not going to care. If they're a card-carrying member of any political party, you're not going to care if they graduated high school. You're not going to care which team they cheer for in a Super Bowl. Those things don't matter. As we get back to that whole thing, you know, about the most important job of the shepherd, right? You got to defend the flock. You got to be willing to kill the wolf. And that's just metaphorically speaking. But when I see these things out there, you know, it's like social media, to me, one of the worst things about it is it has given people this digital courage. And as we talked about, you know, before, sometimes it paints a picture that is not reality about other people's lives that we perhaps may be envious of. But there are other people out there to think, hey, well, everybody's doing this. You know, I'm going to be a hero. No, you're not going to be a hero. You're going to be an idiot. And if you're lucky, you're going to get to go to prison. If you're lucky. And that's the important thing to understand. There's just so much that happens, and like immediately people want to like choose sides here. Well, I know that he did something incredibly stupid. I know that he went and hurt all these people, but why? Why? The why doesn't matter. We don't have to go conduct an autopsy of somebody's pathological thoughts. It doesn't matter. What matters is what happens. Period. No matter the motivation. I'm going to get off my soapbox now. But as I scroll through social media, I see so much of this. People defending negative behavior. You know, where are we as a society when the first question we ask after somebody kills or attacks another member of our extended family in America, the first question we ask is, well, I wonder what was said. I wonder what preceded that. You know, I wonder where he went to school. I wonder what kind of chance he had at life. It just doesn't matter. It simply doesn't matter. Back to some things that do matter. We'll get into, and again, thanks for coming to my TED Talk, but we'll get into this Florida thing. Mississippi State will travel to the swamp on October 18th. We got some long trips this year. Not many trips, but the trips that we make are not going to be just across the state. We got a lot going on, some long trips, and you Bulldog fans that plan to make all those games, you're going to earn it this year. A lot of windshield time for you. This trip to Florida is one of them. Florida holds a 35-19-2 advantage against Mississippi State. And we've had some success against them. You know, maybe not as much as we'd like, but, you know, we hadn't played them that much in the last, you know, 30-some-odd years. But we're going to go back to 1992, a Thursday night game, and Dan and I were dating when this was happening. And I remember being so incredibly pleased to turn the game on. And it was in progress to see that we were winning. Shane Matthews absolutely melts, and that's no shot at Shane Matthews, one of the greatest quarterbacks this state's ever produced. But the Bulldogs rocked the Gators 30-6. We went to Gainesville the next year, and again, competitive game. We lose 38-24, but yeah, that's back. Spurrier ball was really rolling at that point. In 2000. We win that game, too, and Florida went through three quarterbacks in that game. Jesse Palmer, of course, future part of the Bachelor, Rex Grossman, knocked him out of the game. Brock Berlin, guy that was expected to be the savior at LSU and then didn't go there. This is the old the third and 47 game. Pretty incredible. And the score is not truly indicative of Mississippi State's dominance, as Dante Walker and DeCenzo Miller just ran all over Florida that day. Well, they got their revenge in 2001. We went down there, and they picked on Demetric Wright. Remember him? Demetric Wright at South Panola by way of JUCO. You know, went from northwest to east, and that's the old Ramada Gate story. Remember this? For you old-time Bucks. We got beat 52-0. That game was over well before the half. And then we play again in 2004. Sylvester Croom, this is the Jarius Norwood game. This is when Croomed became a thing, as Ron Zook got fired after this game. I think there were three coaches that year that Croom beat. I think that's right. I think that's correct. But State wins that game 38-31. One of Jarius Norwood's shining moments at Mississippi State. In 05, we go to Gainesville. Not a competitive game. We get beat 35-9. And then in 2009, Tim Tebow, and that's the Jonathan Banks coming out party, right? The two pick sixes in that ball game. We only scored 19 points. That Florida defense, absolutely legit. And then in 2010, we go up there and we beat them. And I remember my favorite moment of that game was the post game, when Urban Meyer is having his post-game press conference and you hear our players singing the alma mater and the Hell State and all that stuff. You could hear that in the post-game press conference of Urban Meyer. The State wins 10-7. Kicker gets hurt in the game. They have to use a punter to attempt a game-time field goal. It wasn't close. Dan Mullen, of course, gets the better of Joe Moorhead in a 13-6 game. You remember we lost that game in Kentucky, and we just, you know, we number one, there was some bad officiating, but we acted like we were not ready to play. We were very undisciplined. And I remember driving back from Lexington. Some people were like, you know what, Steve, I don't think this thing is going to work out. And this is, we're already just getting started, right? And I said, you know, we need to find a way to beat Dan. If we lose to Dan, it's going to be inexcusable. And you may remember this. They had the double pass when we inserted a backup safety. Jonathan Abram got hurt. We had to bring him out for a play. We put another safety in. They chose to attack, which kind of shows the, you know, the coaching acumen of one Dan Mullen. They run the double pass there, take advantage of an over-aggressive safety that didn't play a whole lot. They win the game 13-6. Only one touchdown scored in the game. We had our opportunities. Osiris Mitchell, of course, breaking free for what should have been a touchdown, drops a pass. And from there, that was pretty much it. And we were so bad offensively in 18 because instead of us kind of working around Nick Fitzgerald's skill strength, you know, we tried to make him be something that he wasn't. And we paid for it. Last year, of course, competitive game until the fourth quarter. And the Gators win 45-28. So, I honestly, it's a trip to the swamp, but it's not one of those trips that I've looked at historically and just said, you know what, we don't have a chance. I think we may. You know, we'll see how things go. You never know what shape both teams are going to be in by the time we get to them at this point in the season. Texas, you know, we've had some success against Texas, too. We've only played them five times. And what's interesting about that, too, you know, we've played them with greater frequency, and we will moving forward. But, you know, the first meeting back in 1921, and they get us 54-7, which was a very gaudy score for the time. And then Jackie Sherrill arrives. We have the home-and-home with them, and Jackie sweeps that. 13-6 in Starkville, and then we went to Austin to beat them 28-10. Sleepy Robinson, absolutely outstanding. Jackie gets them again in 99. They get the better of us. We were a great team in 99. And I remember early in the ball game, there was a pass interference that didn't go our way that would have extended a drive. And you just kind of felt like it wasn't going to be our day. We knew we weren't going to have much success stopping Ricky Williams. And they get us 38-11. And then, of course, last year we go down there and get beat 35-13. Bulldogs played well in that ball game. And, again, that's the first start for Michael Van Buren. November the 1st. Very important month in Mississippi State football era, right, under Jeff Lebby. This is a huge month for us. We're going to go to Arkansas, where we have had some success. And, of course, Arkansas is a team that some people are forecasting not to be a bowl team this year. And this is one of those games I think most Bulldog fans are looking at saying, you know what, this might be a chance for us. The Razorbacks lead the series 19-15-1. Now, Dak never lost to Arkansas. You just like you know, Nick Fitzgerald owned A&M. Dak always seemed to find a way to beat Arkansas. There was some very impressive games against them, you know, and that's just kind of part of it, you know. But the reality of this, I got to refresh my page here. My mistake. But, you know, playing Arkansas, it's just – I know some people up there think they should be Alabama, but they're really a contemporary of State and Ole Miss. Series began way back in 1916. State won the first three meetings. I don't know if you guys know that. Now, they were very sporadic. You play in 1916, don't meet again until 1939, and then 1992 when they joined the league. So just two meetings between the two schools as non-conference opponents. State wins them both. We didn't lose to them until 1995. How about that? Did you realize that? Yeah, State opens the series with a 4-0-1 record. They finally get us in 94. They get us in 93. That was a tie. My mistake. They get us for the first time in 95, and then rattle off three in a series. We get them in 98, of course, Brian Hazelwood's shining moment at Mississippi State. And then from there, Arkansas dominates the series up until the end of the Sylvester Croom era. You know, Jackie, outside of that 98 win, never got him. Just didn't happen. Croom got them once, and that was on senior day in 2008. And if you recall, they had a potential game-tying field goal that they missed there in the final seconds that proved to be the difference in the game. But 2009 through 2011, you know, not a great start for Dan Mullen against Arkansas. And then, of course, starting in 2012, things began to go back the way of the Bulldogs. And of course, that wild game in 15, when Boniquez Brown blocks a field goal to seal the deal in Fayetteville. First time that we have won in Fayetteville. Yeah, that's right. It was so long we had not won a game in the state of Arkansas. We'd played them a lot of times in Memphis, or a couple times in Memphis. But that was our first win in Fayetteville, because most of the time we played those games in Little Rock, Arkansas. You know, 2013 was the first time we had ever won a football game in the state of Arkansas. Maybe you were unfamiliar with that. We've lived through that. It's imprinted in our brains. But the thing that's so interesting to me, you know, you kind of get through this, of course, that great game in 15, that terrible game in 16, when Peter Sermon did not know how to adjust to stop the toss sweep. And then, of course, in 17, State gets back. We get the 28-21 win. In 18, again, it's so crazy to me. We talk about matchups. I don't know what Chad Morris ever did to Joe Moorhead. But in the 2 years against Arkansas, Jim Moorhead scored 106 points and called. We could have had 80 in 19. I mean, we got so vanilla in the end. And you remember Garrett Schrader suspended for the game. We start Tommy Stevens, and people are like, well, here we go. Game we got to win. And we did. And I remember being on the field that day, and John Cohen came over. He goes, I kind of felt like Arkansas gave up there late. And I said, I don't think they gave up, John. I think they were beaten to submission. 2020, of course, that's the Barry Odom drop eight against Mike Leach. And, of course, we found out K.J. Costello could not read defenses in that game after setting an SEC record the week before against OSU. First win for Arkansas in like 3 years in the SEC. 2021, they get it. We miss a field goal, miss three field goals up there and lose by a field goal. And then 2022, they come up here and just we're all over them. Absolutely all over them. Win that game 40-17. And then we go up there the Zach Garnett year, and I remember walking out with the bride. She did photography for me that day. I remember walking out of there, and I said, it doesn't feel like a win, but I'm so grateful to walk out of this place a winner, because we're trying to get to a bowl game. It's a game that we felt like we had to get, and we did. And again, it's, you know, again, you point out the false start penalty that negated the fumble and the scoop and score. But sometimes people forget that bogus block in the back call that negated a Mike Wright touchdown that would have put the game away. So it's really, you know, six one way, half a dozen the other. And then last year, that's the only game that I really looked at and just thought, you know what, this is an absolute abomination of how poorly we played. To give up 58 points to an Arkansas team that had really struggled on offense leading into that ball game was really an indictment on kind of who we are and what we were about in every aspect, for sure. All right, let's take a look at Georgia. Again, a team from the East we just hadn't played that often. And again, I don't know what, you know, Mike Leach made mad, but all of a sudden it felt like Mike Leach, every time they had to tweak the schedule, they're like, hey, Mike, how about you guys get Georgia? So 21-6, we have beaten Georgia six times in our history, and many of you were around the last time we did it. But, man, it has not been a good stretch against the Georgia Bulldogs for us. We opened the series with a 9-0 win in Athens. And I don't know if you knew this. When I wrote the Dude, I learned this. We were the first visiting team to ever win at Athens, at Sanford Field. Did you know that? Yeah, or Sanford Stadium. I guess maybe it was still Sanford Field then. But, yeah, we were the first visiting team to win at Georgia. Little trivia question for you. We didn't play again until 1950. They get us then, and then in 51 and 56, State rattles off a couple of wins. So three of our six wins come prior to 1960. And then somewhat regular opponents throughout the 60s, somewhat, and on into the 70s. Of course, in 74, big win for us, 38-14. Yes, the Rocky Felker senior year. And then we didn't win again until 2010. So from Rocky to 2010, we didn't win a game. That's 10. Yeah, we didn't play them that often. But when we did, and they were competitive at times. I remember Robert Edwards just killing us in 97, that 47-0 game. And we thought we had a chance to at least make that game competitive. We absolutely did not. We have not had much success in Athens in recent years. But in 2010, the last time we beat Georgia, 24-12, if you remember, Washaun Ely, who was considered by many to be the top running back prospect in the South, goes to Georgia. People were expecting him to be, you know, like a, you know, as close to thing to Herschel Walker as they've had. And then Nico Whitley separates him from the football at the goal line. We recover, and they initially call it, you know, that it wasn't a fumble. It gets reversed. And you remember late in that ball game, Chris Ralph, running game, just running it down the field, and all of a sudden he dropped back to pass, and everybody in the stadium yelled no. And lo and behold, Ralph lays it up there perfect on a post route for Arcedo Clark, who comes down with it to put the game away. State wins 24-12. Very impressive victory for State. And again, really legitimized us in 2010 to be able to beat teams that historically have kind of owned us. We have not won since then. Of course, we go to a 2011. Darius Slay had a pick six in this game to account for State's only touchdown. We lose 24-10. We go over there in 17. A lot of people said we were the second best team in the SEC. They didn't say it after that ball game. Georgia waxes us 31-3. We don't play them again. Of course, they had to do the all SEC schedule in 2020. Georgia was not on the rotation, but we pick them up. You know, just our luck, right? We lose that game 31-24. Mike Leach would have told you, God rest his soul, we should have won the game. I think you guys felt that way too. I think everything Georgia did, we had an answer for. I remember Jaden Wiley had that big catch and run and outran the Georgia secondary, and you're like, that's legit right there. And then the last couple of games have just been kind of wild. You know, we get beat in 22-45-19 in Starkville, and Georgia fans took over our stadium. Absolutely embarrassing. And in 2024, 41-31 is your final, but the game was really not as competitive as the score would indicate. Final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle whenever you're bringing a large group to town, and you should. We're already making plans right now, kind of getting the head count to see about doing it again for New Year's this year. We're already thinking about it. We're already talking about it. My mom loved it. She said, hey, we'd love to be able to come up there for Christmas. If you guys want to rent the house out again, we would love to come. We'll make plans to come. It's a little more difficult now, but you know, my kids are going to be in four different states here later this month. Just kind of how life works, man. You know, you raise high achieving and enterprising children, they're going to move. So we're thinking about that, kicking around. You need to be kicking around that idea too, but more importantly, you need to make some plans. We've already stayed there. We know how wonderful it is. You get the full-service kitchen. You get the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area, six bedrooms, three baths, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. It's the renovated clubhouse at the old country club out past the Highlands. You know how close that is? So incredibly conveniently located. So if it's a ball game weekend or if it's just a chance to come enjoy your favorite restaurants and just kind of enjoy being together in Starkville, you need to make some plans. You do. Now, when you Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, their Facebook page will auto-populate. And you have an opportunity, you know, to just go look at all the Facebook pictures and all the amenities available to you and your guest. Also, some booking options are going to come up too. That's Airbnb, VRBO. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10. That's BSR10, Beautiful Steve Robertson 10, gets you 10% off your stay. I can tell you from my own personal experience, it is a great time to have everybody under one roof. We've got a growing family. We do. And it's difficult to accommodate everybody here in their old childhood bedrooms because now some of them have spouses or significant others or children. And so it's very convenient for us just to go to the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. There's plenty of room for everybody to be able to spread out a little bit, but also some common areas that we can all enjoy being a family. I encourage you to make some memories with your family and those that you love at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Be sure and Google and check it out today. Check availability. You be the linchpin and your friend and family group and make the plans. All right, let's kind of wrap this thing up here. Looking at the schedule, again, what do we have left after Georgia? Just two more regular season games remain. It's Missouri and Ole Miss. And then I'm going to kind of give you my feelings on, you know, what are the possibilities for the schedule for us. And what's kind of the probabilities? And again, there's just so much that you don't know at this point. Missouri, this will be the sixth meeting all time and just the third time that we have played in Columbia, Missouri. the inaugural meeting between the two teams happened in 1981. That Bulldog defense was absolutely outstanding. We just simply couldn't score. We get beat 14-3 by Missouri in Jackson. And then in 84, we go to Columbia. We get beat 47-30. And then in 2015, the first time that we've met Missouri is a Southeastern Conference opponent. Thursday night game, Dak and Duran, you go up there, and they get those guys 31-13. Drew Locke played in that game for Missouri. Future NFL quarterback, Drew Locke. In 2020, they came here, one of the biggest wins of the year, one of the few wins of the year. Will Rogers, an outstanding game. A lot of people expected Missouri to come in here and just run all over us. They did not. Bulldogs win 51-32. And then, of course, last year we lose 39-20. And really a game in that second half that really was not competitive. But it is an interesting trip going up there. Como's kind of a cool place, too. And we'll get them later in the year, so it'll definitely be winter jacket weather, and that is going to be an evening game. And so we'll see what happens. Turf field, too, you know. And then, of course, you got Ole Miss. You know, you guys know the series well. You don't need me to, you know, to kind of illustrate how important this one is. But, you know, the Rebels, 66-49-6 all time against Mississippi State. They've won the last couple of Egg Bowls. And we could have an Egg Bowl show and talk about our favorite Egg Bowls. But listen, we have not maintained possession of the egg one time in the last 5 years. In the Lane Kiffin era, he's 4-1 in Egg Bowls, and that's got to change. And Jeff Levy's well aware of that. You know, I don't think Jeff needs us to remind him how important it is. Obviously, he was on the other side of this thing. And now he gets to coach against Lane Kiffin, you know, who has been very entertaining on Twitter over the years. Also does some silly stuff on Twitter, too. You got to watch that, coach. You got to watch that. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's insanity to think that we have not, we have been competitive in some of these games, but not competitive enough, you know. And I give Ole Miss some credit the last couple of years for being better on defense. But, I mean, you go back, just back to the, you know, Joe Moore had won both the Egg Bowls and was both eligible, bowl eligible and fired. Yeah, crazy, right? And in 2020, a game that we feel like we should have won, we lose in Oxford 31-24. They come here in 2021, and I thought Matt Corral was excellent. We dropped three touchdown passes right before the half. It's our own fault. Miss a field goal or two. But in that second half, Matt Corral made things happen for them. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He did. He beat us. He was outstanding. Tip of the cap. Of course, we won in 2022. You know, the Jackson Dart, you know, little waggle play where they're going to just pitch it underneath. We get a big paw on it, knock it down, win the game. Of course, Will Rogers fumbles right at the goal line. You know, I was thinking if he pulls it right there, he may walk in. He didn't. 2023, we lose 17-7, and you remember this game was so competitive for a while. Prescorn had the big catch, but we had plenty of opportunities in this game to get some separation, and just we were just so bad offensively. And defensively, we played lights out in this game. Just couldn't mount anything offensively. And, of course, last year, you know, a game that was very much there for us to take, we just couldn't get it done. Ole Miss made the plays to win. We did not. So, again, now you kind of look back at all this and you kind of know the history, and we've gone through all these details and previewed all these teams. I do think there is a path to six, but it's probably not what many of you think it is. I honestly believe we have to win all four non-conference games. That's how I feel today. Now, of course, I may feel differently as we get into the season and we see how we're playing and our opponents do. I reserve the ability to change my mind. But I think, you know, to feel reasonable about the possibility of getting to six, you got to get all four of these. And again, I say Arizona State, the most important game of the early part of the schedule. But if you can find a way to get out of those first four, at least 3-1, it's doable. I think it's not as likely, though, without that win against Arizona State. And I'm not just going to assume that we're going to just powerhouse through Southern Miss and Northern Illinois, but we'll be expected to win those games. The Tennessee game in Starkville, again, is one that I have looked at, and I feel like there is a chance because, number one, it's at home. But I think also, too, because kind of where it lays on the schedule, I don't know that we're going to know a lot about Tennessee by then. And I think Aguilar is a guy that if you – the more times he throws it, the more likely you are to catch one of them. I worry about the trip to A&M, even though we have had some success down there. I do think that they're going to be a pretty good team this year. And, you know, I don't know what we're going to do against a running quarterback. Going to Florida, I think DJ Lagway is a star. If he plays in the game, you got to favor Florida. I mean, obviously, we hadn't won many times down there, but it's not one that I'm expecting, and neither for Texas. I think the trip to Arkansas, we have taken some bad teams up there and come home with wins. We've taken some good teams up there and come home with losses. So you never know. And I think by November 1, you're going to have a pretty good idea of what the Sam Pittman era is going to look like. I know they'd like to keep him. They like Sam. But that schedule is brutal, man. And by the time we get them, we may be in a much better position than they are. And again, it's an afternoon game. So, you know, maybe that impacts the crowd a little bit. You know, we'll see. Again, I don't expect to beat Georgia here or away. I think going to Missouri is going to prove to be tough. And so that kind of leaves you where you are, like Ole Miss. It's a rivalry game. You never know. It's the Friday. It's 11 a.m. And I think that's typically more difficult for the road team because, you know, you got to travel and everything is sped up. And, you know, by the end of the year, you never know what it's going to look like. So, you know, I think if you get 3-1, you're probably going to have to beat Tennessee. You got to beat Arkansas, and you got to find a way to beat Ole Miss. If you get those four non-conference games, of course, you've got a little more margin for error. But, yeah, there's some other games out here you just kind of look at right now and you say, you know what, those are going to be difficult games that we're projected to lose. But, yeah, I do think there's a pathway to 6, but you're going to have to win. If you're Jeff Lebby, you have to win one or two SEC games this year at a minimum. At a minimum. If no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You know, bowl game or not, you got to at least get 5. And I hate going into a football season thinking, hey, it's going to be a losing year. You know, you got 12 games. I don't think it's going to be a losing year. I think we will see enough improvement on defense to be very competitive, which in turn will give the offense more opportunities. And I think Jeff Lebby is a guy that will find a way with this wide receiver room and a running back room that should be a huge strength. And this is an offense that likes to run the football. You go back to the years at Central Florida, and you go back to the years at Ole Miss, and you go back to the years at Oklahoma when Jeff Lebby was there. When they were at their best, it's when they could control the game through the running game. Last year, we were incapable of doing that. And a lot of that was because we simply couldn't get stopped. So you couldn't play as much ball control. You couldn't just line up and just physically overpower people. And number one, I don't think we had the personnel to consistently do that. We also didn't have the opportunity. So I truly believe if we can play more complementary football, then you have a chance to kind of dictate terms. You know, last year we talked about the Arkansas game. It was the worst possible matchup for us because they were this very physical, ground and pound between the tackles running game, and we had no resistance whatsoever. And one of the things that I think about, you know, Isaac Smith having so many tackles and Stone Blanton, I mean, that's second-level stuff because we weren't getting any push. We were not fitting gaps up front. If we can just be average up front, you get a chance to have a much better team. Not just a much better defense, but a much better team. And again, with all the money that we've allocated and the scholarship spots we've allocated for the defensive line, we've got to get the return on that investment. Everything matters. When you think about that defensive front, everybody benefits. All of a sudden, linebackers are making plays at or behind the line of scrimmage rather than kind of clinging and hanging on after a 3 or 4 yard gain. Your defensive backs don't have to cover for 4 and 5, 6 seconds. You know, everybody improves when you get push, and we were so incredibly anemic last year stopping the run, and then on top of it, even in obvious passing downs, we couldn't get there. And we had some guys that were highly recruited, and we had another hodgepodge of guys that either were injured or underperforming, and we had some other guys, too, that just simply weren't ready. And so now we believe we have corrected that, but now it's time to see it on the field. And listen, there's going to be so many of our fans are going to be like, you know, hey, Steve, I got to see it to believe it. And I think that's fair. I do. I'm not going to sit here and hype it up and say, hey, you know, we're going to be a team that's going to certainly be in a bowl game. We're going to be chasing some big things in November, because I don't believe that. I do think this is going to be a better football team. I do think this is a team that will win five or six games. I don't think there's any question about that in my mind today. But you know what? When Blake Shapen got hurt last year, I said, well, that's it. We probably won't win another game outside of the UMass game. That's it. We're done. That's pretty much what happened. Now, of course, by the time we kick it off, I'm such a believer in the Bulldogs. I think, you know, we'll find a way. We'll find a way. Bully will find a way. But Bully didn't have to go out there and play defensive line. And maybe he should have, right? Maybe he absolutely should have. But those are my thoughts about our schedule. And again, when we get back together on Wednesday, we'll have a ton to talk about based on what your assistant coaches and some other staffers have had to say. As we get ready to open preseason camp, it's finally here, kids. And so proud to be with you back for another year. This is year 28, I guess. Yeah, year 28 or 29, I can't remember. It's been a while. I'm getting old. But I love and appreciate each of you, and I hope that you and all those that you love are safe right now and free from harm. And I want the best things in life for you. You know, when I get down on my knees and I pray my prayers of gratitude, one of the things that I pray for is that all the people within the sound of my voice get the things they need in life and some of what they want. You know, I'm not one of these kinds of people that believe that I can't win unless you lose. I just don't believe that. There are other people that do. I don't feel the need to tear other people down. I just don't. That's just not the way I choose to live my life. Now, if somebody comes at me personally to my face or whatever, yeah, we'll defend that. But no, I'm not going to go out there and attack other people. And I just want us to have a good year. And I want our fans to have a good year and to have some enthusiasm about football. I can tell you what's interesting to me, and I had a discussion with Bo Bounds earlier this weekend about that aspect of things, that there are more people asking me and him about baseball than they are football. I mean, here we are the week leading into camp and most of the discussions about baseball. And now, granted, we're a baseball school, but we have to get this football program in a position where we're not thinking about baseball come August 1st. We're thinking about football. We're fired up about football. We're thinking about buying bowl tickets for the kids for Christmas and things of that nature. We've got to get back to that. 13 consecutive bowl games. And now, now we hadn't been a couple years. You know, and it's not fun. You know, it's not fun. I want it to be fun for all of you. And it's like when we have to go cover these games, and I guess we don't have to. A lot of other people that don't. We could sit at home and just type off a TV. But we don't get a chance to talk to the coach, can't ask players questions. We need to be there to represent you. But I can tell you, it's a grind, man. When you know the team isn't good and you're getting in the car and you're expecting to go get beat, you know, you try to make the best of it and say, you know what, hey, I've never covered a game at Texas until last year. You know, so like, hey, at least I can knock that one off the bingo card, right? That's an important aspect of it too. But what's most important is to win games. And that's what you and I both want. It doesn't matter who it's against or where it is. We want to win games. We want to have a chance to play meaningful football in the month of November. But I do believe we have done the best we can to equip this staff on and off the field with players to put a more competitive product on the field. And I see people, well, the schedule's so tough. The schedule is always tough. That's a neighborhood in which we live. Okay, and I'm not one of these who believe we got to lower the hurdles. I think we just got to improve the quality of our product. Simple as that. Nobody's going to feel sorry for Mississippi State. Never. Never going to happen. If you hadn't done so, go to DutyNobleBook.com, and you can get signed copies of all my sports titles, including The Dude. I will be at the Mississippi Book Festival the morning of the Alcorn State game. Very honored to be picked to be on the baseball panel. And Rick Cleveland, I believe, is going to be our moderator for that. So I'm excited to go talk some college baseball. It's always fun to get invited to that first-class event is incredible, and I am so grateful when I get that opportunity. So those of you going to the Book Festival, be sure and come check me out. And we'll have some other baseball panelists, which will be fun. And then in addition to that, too, you can get all my other sports titles, of course, Flim Flam, Stark Villains, Alpha Dogs, Dogpile, and the personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls. And again, come float with us at True Rest Float Spa, Starkville, 662-268-7601. Come join us over at jeanspage.com. You'll be glad you did. Nobody's going to cover the Bulldogs as extensively as we do. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.